Welcome to the Red Rain Podcast. Here is your host from Revenge of the Birds, Walter Mitchell.
Thank you, Kyle Little Rock Ledbetter. Welcome back, Cardinal fans. We're excited to have Kevin Murray back with us for a follow-up. We did some fun stuff after the draft, and now I was curious to know if we, you know, could pick a roster right now, who our favorites would be. I have mine. He has his. Welcome back, Kevin. How are you?
Yeah, thanks for having me back. Yeah, I'm very well, thank you. It's been quite a busy few weeks, really, just sort of with life and whatnot. But I'm excited to be back and excited to see what our combined 53 will look like in the end. So, yeah, excited.
All right. So let's start with the quarterback position. How many are you keeping?
I am keeping two. And that is obviously K1 and Desmond Ridder.
Right. So you're going to waive Clayton Tune, right?
I believe so, yes. I think this is a very difficult choice to make at the quarterback position. Do we take two or do we take three? And I think for how we're going to be setting up, I think there's other positions where we're probably going to need to take a few more personnel across. And ultimately, for what we saw from Clayton Tune last season, probably wasn't what we were maybe hoping to see. But again, I don't think there's anything that he brought to the table for the team that couldn't be done by somebody with starting experience in this league. So I did unfortunately make the decision, to waive Clayton Tune, unfortunately, yes.
Okay. Well, I grappled with that decision as well, and I'm opting to keep him for a number of reasons. One is I don't think anyone should judge him off of that Browns game. That was...
To throw a rookie into arguably the best right. D-line in the league was a very high ask, but it's not so much off of that I based it off. I think it was more of a case of the packages that we brought him in for were obviously those really fourth and short, our version of the tush push. Yeah. So unfortunately, we didn't really get to see him, you know, with a great supporting cast. Yeah, exactly. But I think weighing that up in terms of the options where you could bring someone in with that starting experience was the deciding factor for me, I should say.
Right. What was deciding for me to keep him was that, A, I thought he played very well in the preseason, given the circumstances last year of a new offense and brand new everything. And I thought he'd done enough to warrant at least consideration for starting week one. And I wish we had seen what he could have done in week one, because it was, you know, those Josh Dobbs fumbles that made the difference between winning and losing that game. Which, you know, in retrospect, you know, Josh Dobbs being raced in, not knowing anybody, and, you know, being thrust into the starting lineup as a quarterback that fast, unprecedented. I've never seen it before to start a season. And, you know, we can revisit the Dobbs thing another time. But the thing with Clayton Tune that intrigues me is, number one, is he passed for over 4,000 yards. He had an NFL-caliber wide receiver in Tank Dell and clicked big time with Tank Dell. I thought he played really well with Michael Wilson in the preseason and Greg Dortch. That was really encouraging to me. Also, I was very mindful that Mel Kiper was really high on Clayton Tune, called him his sleeper quarterback of day three. And when Mel goes that far on a quarterback, I tend to take notice. And I can see some of the reason, having watched his college tape, I can see some of the reason why. But here's the main thing is that I still believe he could challenge Desmond Ridder for QB2. I think that's going to be a dogfight. Secondly is Clayton Tune was so outstanding on the scout team that he got the Pat Tillman Award of recognition. And if you look in our division, him playing Matthew Stafford and Geno Smith in practice for the team, it was valuable. And and has value, and that's an underappreciated part of being a third quarterback or a scout team quarterback. You know, now they brought in to his brother, you know, for the rookie minicamp. I don't know if they're going to sign him as a quarterback four going into the camp, but what Tune gives you is both the good arm and the running ability. I mean, he's a sneaky good runner. And he ran quite a bit at Houston, had a number of touchdowns running the football. So for that, what I didn't want to risk was, I think he's very claimable. And particularly in this world today of teams with QBs and having three QBs available on game days and things like that, where you can, you know, they'll all three be active, made me feel like the rewards plus, you know, he's under contract for, you know, two more years after this, and he could be a really good QB2 for us. And we drafted him. We spent a fifth round pick. I'm going to be fascinated.
It's a very good point. And again, it was that case of using that draft pick on him. It was almost a case of you want to see him at least give him a bit more time. It was a really hard decision. Like I said, there was another position group which I kind of toyed up about where I could make this choice. So, it was a really tough one. But all those points you made, it fantastic points. You know, having someone like that on the scout team. And I do think that he could be a good QB2. It's just a case of with this year, it was, this was arguably my hardest group to decide of what I was going to do.
Yeah. And I am so understanding of that because I'm tempted to do it myself because there are guys on the back. I'll be interested to see who your first five out are, you know, because there are all those guys. I bet there are five guys there. You can make, we're going to make cases for roster cases for guys that we worry will get claimed by other teams, you know? So, I mean, because this roster is deeper than way deeper than it was last year. And when you add in the combination of draft picks that we had last year to 12 this year.
Exactly. It makes it very difficult to that where that bubble is. It has been quite hard to draw the line on certain players because of how much this roster has been turned over. So it was a lot harder to do this than I thought it was, to be honest.
I know. I'd recommend it to any of you listening. Try it yourself. Maybe then you'll understand when we get to this why I'm concerned about the Zay Jones signing and how that complicates the roster. So we'll get to there soon. We're going to go running back now. I wound up taking four.
So did
Connor,
I.
Benson, DeMercado, and Carter. Are those your same four?
They are not. No. So I have James Connor, Trey Benson, Michael Carter, and DJ Dallas.
Yeah. I'm cutting Dallas. I think it was a poor signing. We got other guys who can return the ball. I know we'll have to take a cap hit, a small cap hit. It's kind of a 1 year deal to begin with. But it came down to me between Carter and Dallas. And I like Michael Carter. I mean, I think he's a better player. He has more value. He has more versatility. I think he can play special teams. He's you know, and I love DeMercado. I mean, he has a special skill that few young running backs coming in the league have, and that is taking the romance out of the A-gap blitz. He is the best protector for Kyler, and if we're valuing protecting Kyler, he's better than Connor at it, and I don't know what Benson can do with it yet, but Carter's not great at it. That's not his forte. Although he tries, he sticks his nose in there. But DeMercado stonewalls, guys. I mean, it's not just take, you know, slow him down. He like meets him in the hole and says hello. So And I love the way DeMercado ran against two of the top three defenses in the NFL. He ran great against the 49ers. Remember that touchdown off left tackle? That was awesome. And then he had a really great game starting against the Ravens. He just dogged it in both games. So that's a young player we'd have under control for 4 years. I don't know. Don't want to get rid of. But, and as far as the kickoffs, I think DeMercado could take those and do fine. I mean, he's a tough runner. He's got good vision. He's got good stop and start ability. I also think Michael Carter could take kickoffs. And I also think, I don't know about Trey Benson, but I imagine he could be dynamic in that role. So,
yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Again, this was a difficult choice because my choice was between DJ Dallas and DeMercado, but it was the free agency signing that sort of tipped it to the favor. For him. But I hope it wasn't just a panic signing. It was almost like an insurance policy that they took out in terms of obviously knowing that they might have been targeting a certain back in the draft. So. They were almost sort of doubling down. But I think from the amount of cap that we can carry over next year, I could potentially see him not making the 53 and being a sort of a cap casualty. But in which case, right. I do think they'd probably take DeMercado over Dallas.
Right. Which, just to point it out for you guys, the exact number is $2.395 million of dead cap that would be on DJ Dallas's contract. Most of it in the first year, he only makes the league minimum guaranteed in years 2 and 3.
Right. Good call on that. That's it. And ideally, of course, you don't want to eat that, but you also want to put the best team on the field. And by the way, in terms of punt returns, there's no reason to take Greg Dortch out of that role. He shined in it last year. And it's not like he's going to get so many touches a game that you'd have to protect them, because what a lot of fans are forgetting is that we are not a wide receiver centric offense anymore. And, it's great to have talent there in depth, but, we've got the people who are going to touch the ball the most are not wide receivers. Ideally, they're running backs and tight ends. Unless we'll have to open this up, I'm interested to see, what Kevin has to say about this, unless we're changing our offense. JG said we're going to blow everything up and start from scratch. And I was scratching my head right then saying, like, on offense, why would you do that? But maybe Kyler's been in people's ears and said, we got to open things up more, and I need more receivers, and I need, this needs to become more quarterback friendly for me than what it was. I didn't feel like I could get in a rhythm, which is what Kurt Warner would say about this kind of offense. So, he always wanted to get in a rhythm first and then run the ball. But let's go to tight end when we get to the wide receivers. I'm sure it's going to be a great discussion.
Yeah, with tight end, I think so.
Yeah. With tight end, who did you take?
I've taken four. I've taken Trey McBride, Tip Ryman. We've got Higgy Bear. And I've also taken Travis Vokalek as well.
Yeah, I like him and I like those choices. That was a tough call for me.
It was. I was debating three or four, but I've gone for four. On the point that you've just touched on about us sort of reinventing our offense, I really hope we don't, because I think we showed great promise at the back end of last season to sort of how we can operate when everyone was on the same page. And I do see these heavy tight end sets, which is where we sort of had a lot of success. And I think by putting we touched on him in the last episode we did together about Tip and what he can bring to the table. And then my thought process was having two similar players in terms of McBride is a great all-rounder, but he's predominantly the pass catching tight end. Tip Ryman's the opposite in terms of he's, predominantly a blocking tight end, but he can still, take it when he needs to. And then Higgins and Vokalek are sort of on the same page for that. I feel like obviously Higgins being a converted wide receiver, and then obviously the size that Travis Vokolek brings to the table as well is obviously almost imitating that role. I think that the Ryman's going to come in, but I think, you know, that's going to lead us up to a lot of, you know, 12, 13 personnel and perhaps even sort of jumbo packages out there as well. I'm really interested to see what Drew Petsen dials up for us this year. But I decided to go for four.
Yeah, I really respect that. And I wanted to so badly. And I just thought at the end of the players, we might be able to sneak through waivers. I thought Vokolek might be possible. You know, he was on a practice squad last year. So, but man, given my own druthers, I want him on the roster for all of the reasons you just enumerated. Plus, I like our depth on the practice squad with Blake Whitehart as a receiver type tight end and Bernard Sekovitz as a rugged inline blocker. So there's depth there that can be used on practice squads. So, yeah, I think I'm going to regret this and change my mind at some point during the course of the offseason, especially when preseason comes in. Because I think Vokolek brings a really good package. He's a rugged blocker and a big, solid receiver that can exploit the middle. So much respect there. In wide receivers, I took five. Harrison, Wilson, Dortch, Moore, and Palmer. I left Zay Jones off. I just don't see the fit. I don't see why you would want to give him first team reps over Wilson at this point in Wilson's career, especially after Wilson was so ecstatic about the bonding he had with Kyler Murray at the end of last year. I mean, we played our best football the last two games offensively with Wilson and Dortch, and there was good reason for that. They were, you know, clicking with Kyler. And so the thought of taking valuable reps and first team reps away from them. And I like Zay Jones, don't get me wrong, but the history of us with veteran wide receivers has been awful. It's just, even DeAndre Hopkins turned out to be an utter nightmare. And maybe I'm just paranoid because of that, but I've also watched over the years that, you know, when you sign AJ Green, goodbye Andy Isabella. When you sign Demir Byrd, goodbye Isabella, the whole three draft picks they picked. I mean, you're playing one-year guys over draft picks. And we drafted three wide receivers the last 2 years. I say play them. I mean, you know, imagine, I made this point the other day. Imagine if the Rams last year decided at this time, you know what, we'll trade for Zay Jones. And, you know, we'll just try to groom Puka for another year. How would that have turned out? You know, and then I know people are saying, well, Puka's a unicorn. But is he? If you go look at the top receivers in the NFL now, a lot of them weren't first rounders. Like Amon-Ra St. Brown. He's an all-pro now. And, you know, winning from the slot and winning with bigger wide receivers like that, with Puka going versatile inside-outside, St. Brown going versatile inside-outside. Even, you know, C.D. Lamb now is inside-outside. You know, so those were my thoughts there. What are yours?
I've decided to take six. And it's kind of similar to what you've just mentioned. So I've got Marvin, Mike Wilson, Greg Dortch, Zay Jones, Chris Moore, and I've actually got TJ Palmer as well in there.
Exactly.
So out of the choices for receivers here, I decided to cut loose Zach Pascal. The reason for this is because his role for this offense was predominantly to block. And going back on film, I think that is a role that TJ Palmer can fill quite nicely. And I think for, you know, what he brought to the team, I'd much rather replace that with a rookie who you could develop, who also, you know, has the ability to be a receiving, you know, option, which we didn't really do for Zach Pascal. I think he had four catches for us in the whole of last season. So, so I decided to bring through six. Again, I was weighing up with the Zay Jones option as well, and where he would, what he would bring. And but I think, again, what you mentioned is that inside outside versatility. I think he could bring that. It was Zach Pascal really who was sort of the main one I left out for us here in this receiving core this year.
Right. Here's my problem with keeping six wide receivers is that aside from maybe wide receivers one and two, you want all your other guys to be special teamers, or otherwise you're not going to activate them on game days. And I think that Dortch, Moore, and Palmer fit the bill special team-wise, so they check those boxes. I question whether Zay Jones at this point in his career is going to contribute on special teams. I'm hoping it all works out for the best and that this turned out to be a good signing. But if this was a more wide receiver centric offense, I'd be elated, because normally you'd keep six. But because it's not, I feel like, you know, the teams that run this offense the best have stables, as we talked about it, running back and tight end. And so, I mean, you managed to keep four running backs and four tight ends plus six receivers. Did that affect your offensive line? How many are you keeping on the offensive line?
Let me just check. Nine.
Yeah. All right. That's going to be a really interesting discussion. Who do you have?
So, O-line, I've got Paris, Jonah Williams, Christian Jones, arguably my favorite player from last year, which is Hjalti Froholt, Will Hernandez, Isaiah Adams, Tristan Cologne, Evan Brown, Elijah Wilkinson, and a player who, again, was right on the bubble for me, is Kelvin Beecham.
Right.
So, thought process behind this was the player for me who I've actually spoken about before, who unfortunately didn't make it for me this year, is John Gaines. The reason for that was, unfortunately, he's essentially going into this year as a rookie, in the sense that we lost him before the season started. He didn't see any snaps on the field. We still don't know what position he's going to be playing at. And in terms of free agency, obviously we brought in Evan Brown, who has, you know, experience at center. We've also got Tristan Cologne, who has experience at center. And we just drafted Isaiah Adams, who is going to come in and compete for that starting left guard spot, which is where you could argue that that's where John Gaines would be playing as well. So unfortunately, he was a player for me that it was a very difficult decision, but again, because we haven't actually got the opportunity to see him play, but just for how free agency planned out and how the draft planned out, unfortunately, he was a casualty for me. And then one that was right on the bubble for me again was Kelvin Beecham. So Kelvin Beecham, again, has been a really solid sort of swing tackle for us. But the way I see this, again, you've just brought in Christian Jones, who I think is at very, very worst going to be a starting swing tackle for a team. We've just got Jonah Williams to come in, obviously, who's got experience on the left side and the right side. And obviously, we've got Paris, who we've been playing on the right side, but could play left tackle as well. So I was very apprehensive on sort of cutting Beecham because he's a very reliable player. And obviously he brings a lot of experience and a lot of veteran leadership into that O-line room as well. So he made it just, I would say it was just, I thought, for Kelvin Beecham. But again, I think he's one that could be right on that bubble as well.
Oh, so he did make it.
He did. Yes.
So you have 10.
Do I have 10? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I did have 10. Sorry. Yes. Well, but, sorry, I do have 9. It's my notes and my formatting of my notes, because I've got, I say Beecham - John Gaines, and then so obviously they're the two that don't make it. So that was, there you go, perfect argument for it. I couldn't even decide when I was reading my notes out.
Right. No, I see, this is how hard this is. And I, again, reiterate to all of you listening, give it a shot. It's a puzzle piece, and it's a, you know, these are really tough decisions, and I know that they're going to be tough on the coaches. So I went with 10 and felt compelled to go with 10. And the biggest, so I had Paris Johnson, of course. I think that Seth Brown will probably, I mean, Evan Brown will probably end up starting at left guard until they feel comfortable putting in Adams. So I had Johnson, Adams, Brown, Froholt. And I'm so happy to hear you. I want to get on him for a second because I love this kid and so do you. And we need to explain why we do, because some people aren't getting it. And then, of course, Hernandez, and then Williams. And I love Cologne's versatility. He's a, you know, great swing guy who can start in a pinch. And then, of course, Evan Brown. And then I had Beecham making it, and Jones. Because I wasn't concerned, I wasn't convinced Jones can play the left side, and Beecham was better than I ever imagined on the left side last year in a pinch. And then to me, it became a question of John Gaines the second versus Elijah Wilkinson. And I know the coaches love Elijah Wilkinson, and he's a big, strong player. But if he's not going to start there, I'm going with the guy we have for 4 years in John Gaines.
That's a very good point. Yeah.
But you make a good point in that, and here's what I considered. Was it because of Gaines' injury? I'm not sure he gets claimed if you waive him. You know, so he may be the safest bet to sneak through to waivers. So I get that. From that end, I think you can still retain him if you do. Depends pretty much on how well he plays in preseason. And, you know, if he's really good in preseason, then we might have an issue. But I just wanted to keep him because the other thing is with the price of guards these days, who knows what, you know, Will Hernandez is going to command in free agency next year.
That's very true.
Whether we'll be able to re-sign him. So, all right. So let's talk about Fro.
Yeah, so I've when we made the free agency signing, I remember just being a bit not perplexed, but I was quite surprised. But then I looked into it and I wasn't surprised at all. But in terms of where he's come from, who drafted him,
right?
And just his style of play, and I just think he's blown all expectations out of the water this season. I think you watch any of those James Conner runs where he's, you know, breaking 20, 25 yards off the field. Who's running in front of him? It's the 6'6" behemoth called Hjalte Froholt, the Viking. It's, I just think, yeah, I love him. I think he's been such an underrated signing for us. And I think he played his tail off last year. I really do. And the problem I find is, I think I might have touched on this before, is people pay too much attention to like PFF grades. And, you know, his PFF grade wasn't particularly great at the first half of the season, but it doesn't matter. Just go back and watch the film. Like, he's just he's just such a good leading blocker and an athletic center. Like, and how often do people rave about people like, you know, Jason Kelce and how athletic he was? But Froholt's in that same bucket. Like, he's always where he needs to be when he's up the field. And I just, I just think he's great.
And he finishes blocks.
Yeah.
You love a guy like that. He's made to order with all the movement in that, in the offense, and just his attack mentality, I think is contagious. And I am of the same belief as Kevin for all of the great reasons he said, so I don't need to reiterate those. But here's the one that sticks out to me is I love the way he bonded with Kyler.
Definitely.
That was the biggest surprise to me, especially with Kyler being under center more and this and that. I didn't see some of the glitches we've seen with Kyler and centers before. And, you know, I thought they got along great, and I thought there was chemistry there, so that was encouraging to me as well. So I'm just really happy we have Fro, and I hope we keep him.
Yeah, I do as well, because I think he's only under contract for this season now, isn't he? Because I think we only signed him on a, was it a 2-year contract?
I think you're right.
This year, so I would really like us to see us. If he has another season with us this year, then I'd have no qualms with re-signing him.
Right. And then, you know, if he gets nicked up, has to miss a game, we've got elaborate depth there with Cologne, who's, I think Cologne's natural position is center. I think he's really good. I watched him in his preseason games, and when he played with the Ravens in game days back a couple years ago, and I was very impressed with his ability in there. And then, of course, with Gaines, who can flip, you know, they'll have him playing guard and center. You know, and on the practice squad, we, you know, there's Keith Ishmael, who's a center. I like that guy too. We've got depth on the practice squad. Carter O'Donnell is a swing tackle and can play guard. I hesitated on him a little there. I was thinking, I know he's well liked by Clayton Adams, the O-line coach. So that was he gave me a little bit of pause. I don't think that he'd get claimed. So I think you can get him on, although at the tackle position, you never know with tackle needy teams. And I still don't want to give up on Marquise Hayes, at least as a practice squad player. Because if he ever, you know, smells the coffee, look out. I mean, he's a mauler. And he's got great size, but I don't think. And then one of my super sleepers, as I watched him, was Austin Pleasance. He's now in that mix. This kid, I mean, he reminded me of the kid Barton from Duke when I watched his tape at the tackle. He was playing right tackle at Ohio, and his down blocks were like Barton's. And really big, strong kid. I think he's like 6'6".
Yeah, he's got great size. 6'6", 330, I think he is, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm really encouraged by the depth, and I think we'll have adequate depth. And Barton Jackson, I want to give a shout-out to him. I know that he's very well-liked as a right tackle in their system. I don't think he converts to left tackle as a swing guy, but you know, we'll probably see a lot of him in the preseason. And, you know, so the way they've amassed and added to the depth of that of the offensive line is better than I've seen ever. Quite honestly.
Oh yeah, I agree. It's the position group I think that's been neglected again the last few years is this O-line depth, but they've slowly been building that depth and good depth at that as well. It's not just, you know, bodies. It's, you know, competent players, which is good to see. Which is why this made it so difficult.
Right. So how many total did you have on offense?
So let's see, 8, 10, 16, 25.
Okay. Good. That's an even number. That's good. All right, let's shift over to the defense. I had him keeping 3 nose tackles. I did nose tackles and defensive tackles. I had him keeping 3. Bilal Joseph, who was a classic nose guard to plug the run. I like that signing. The kid Tonga. Oh man. Kyrus Tonga. I'm so that he's going to be a fan favorite. And I really, really like Roy Lopez. And I think he's got position versatility. I think you could put him at the 34 DN too and play some 3 technique with him. And so I kept those 3. What about you?
I've kind of just combined mine into just defensive line, then I went and combined edge and linebackers as well. So I went for 6. So obviously Darius Robinson, Bilal Nichols, Justin Jones, LJ Collier, is it Kyrus Tonga or Kyrus? But yeah, I've got Tonga and then Dante Stills.
Okay, so can you repeat those? I just want to check them off again. Robinson.
Robinson. Bilal Nichols.
Right.
Justin Jones, LJ Collier, Kyrus Tonga, and Dante Stills.
Okay. So no Lopez.
No Lopez, no. Again, it was, it's kind of just going for the two nose tackles in this, really. Right. Like I said, I really like what I see from Tonga. Everything that I saw from Vikings fans when we claimed him was people were quite disappointed that they didn't give him a chance to develop. So I think he's going to be quite an interesting player to watch. And then Bilal Nichols as well. I was a big fan of that signing and the Justin Jones signing as well.
Right.
Obviously, this team sees something LJ Collier this year to bring him back on another 1-year deal. So I think obviously he'll make that. And then I've kind of put Darius Robinson in here because I do think we're going to be playing him a lot more inside.
Absolutely.
And then Dante Stills as well, who I think was a very, very pleasant surprise from last year's draft. And I really liked what I saw from him and can't wait to see another year of development from him.
Right. Because now, Kevin, I mean, we're rushing four. To have Robinson and Stills on the inside, that is an instant upgrade.
I recorded a pod last night and I said that this is the most unrecognizable group for us. It's just this defensive line. Literally Dante Stills, it's a completely revamped unit. And it was obviously probably arguably our biggest weakness last year. Yeah. And I'm just excited to see sort of what we can bring, because the players we've signed here and the players that we've got not only, got that opportunity to rush the passer, but it's just this such a stalwart run defense, which is obviously a massive issue for us last year as well. So,
right.
I'm really, really excited to see sort of what this revamped D-line is going to look like.
Right. And I want to give a shout out to Derek LeBlanc, the coach, of the D-line, because I thought he did a phenomenal job last year.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, I think we've got to give him credit for the fact that we pretty much had a starting defensive line every single week. It was different. So to bring these guys in and get them up to speed and get them playing, as they did, I think he did a fantastic job as well.
And actually, they graded well. I mean, Lopez had the highest grade. It was 63.5. I really loved the way he played. Stills started off slow, but then every week was getting game grades in the 60s. It was really encouraging there. And he got good play from some of the depth guys. Ben Still, Naquan Jones stuck his nose in there. Phil Hoskins. These guys are still on the roster and could help out from the practice squad. I'm really fascinated to see what he does with Bilal Nichols and Justin Jones, because I think he can take their games to the next level. And I think Jones has some wiggle in the pass rush. Of course, he sacked Kyler last year in that Chicago game. And so tapping into that's going to be good. I ended up having the three nose tackles who I think also can slide over when needed at defensive, 34 defensive end, except Nichols. Nichols is a pure nose, but Tonga and Lopez could have versatility. And then I kept Stills, Robinson, of course. I didn't. It was for me. It was between Collier and Thomas, and I went back and forth and back and forth, and was just saying to myself, "Oh gosh!" I mean, I always thought that Collier could be a better player in the 34 than the 43. And so I'm fascinated with him, but I love Thomas, Cameron Thomas. I love him. And I'm distraught thinking he's going to be the next third rounder to take a hike. Love the clips they did with him on HBO Hard Knocks, with J.J. Watt and with with Matt Burke, who was then the defensive line coach, who now is the defensive coordinator in Texas. I think if Chris Thomas hits the waivers, the Texans will be the first to try to claim him. I just think that they've, again, this is a classic case where the Cardinals, I mean, on day one, when Steve Keim drafted Cameron Thomas, I was so excited because being a BC fan and knowing Zach Allen the way that I did, I was like, this kid is a Zach Allen clone who can rush from the outside, but mostly rush from the inside. He can defend from the inside. He had a very similar career to Zach Allen's and played similar spots. But when Steve Keim said, oh, yeah, he's an outside linebacker, I was just like, you cannot be serious.
To be fair, you could take that and apply that to, I don't know how many players that's happened to before.
I know.
You know, it's let's have a think off the top of my head. You've got Hassan Reddick. Who else?
Isaiah Simmons
as well. Yeah, it's... Yep. You know, it's and exactly Cam Thomas as well. It's just, it's disappointing because I don't think we've actually seen him play at his most natural position.
Right. And I think he can rush from the interior. I've seen him do it. He had four sacks as a rookie. I mean, that's saying something. You know, we're getting all excited about four sacks from BJ Ojulari. You know, so, you know, and Cameron Thomas, Vance Joseph did a good job, in my opinion. Well, actually, it was Matt Burke who was making those calls. To give Matt Burke the credit, he was inside, outside in the rush, rushing mostly from the inside towards the end. He was doing really well. He was collapsing the pocket. He was, you know, and he's got finishing power. He gets quickly to the ball and takes down the quarterback. So, you know, this will be interesting to see Collier. Hopefully they'll play him in preseason so we get a good look at him. For me, I just had to stick with Thomas, providing, and I don't know if this will be the case, that they move him inside to 34 DN, where I think he'll be fantastic, and for inside pass rusher. All right. So, yeah, and Jones, I'm really fascinated to see what they do with Justin Jones. I think they're paying him a lot, but there's a reason for it. Some of his tape is really impressive. I mean, that game he had against the Cardinals was really, I mean, left a mark. And I think that Monty sat up and took notice of that amongst other people. So, all right. Did you do the linebackers all together, or did you do them by
alphabet? I did. Yeah, I did. I did it just, I called it linebacker/edge. So I had Kazir White, who is going to be the green dot, I think, for this defense. Matt Wilson Sr. I've got Gardecki, BJ Ojulari, Chris Barnes, Victor Dimukeji, Owen Papo, and Xavier Thomas, which means I made the decision to cut Zayvon Collins.
Oh my God.
I know. It's a big one. It's a huge decision. The thing for me thinking about this is it's difficult because in all of the presses that we see, you know, JG and Nick Rallis talking, they absolutely rave about Zayvon and they say that, you know, he's and what he brings to the table for this team.
Right.
But they haven't picked up his fifth year option. And it's a case of you've just drafted an edge rusher in Xavier Thomas.
Right.
Although he'll be probably a rotational, you know, pass rush specialist. It was a very difficult decision because although they said that, you know, he's come on leaps and bounds and he's playing really well what they want him to do, it's very difficult to make the argument to say that is he being that impactful player as an edge rusher. And right. I didn't think that would be enough of the case to bring him forward to the 53. So it was a tough one because I do like Zayvon, but yeah, I'd made the decision that he did not make it.
All right. Well, we concurred on all, but I had Jimmy KJ out and Collins in. But I get your point. I mean, there are times last year, if you didn't know who was playing that strong outside linebacker spot, Jimmy KJ looked very much like Collins. Neither one of them is a huge pass rushing threat, but both of them are tenacious versus the run. So, you know, that was hard for me to do with DeMikeje, but I mean, when you look technique wise and technically wise, I mean, Zaven Collins had the highest defensive grade on the team.
Yeah, that is the only thing.
Doing something right. Put it that way. He's
it's very true.
The run really well. I mean, I think I would hope he has trade value, at least. I would imagine. I mean, some teams are going to want to stick him back where I believe he belongs at NFL Mike. He's made to order for it physically, in my opinion. And I think the Cardinals are going too small on the inside, and it's going to hurt him. I think it's going to. I hope not. I hope White can hold up this year. But I hope White can be more downhill to the football than he was last year. And I thought Barnes was better when he got in there. And I liked Papo when he got in there at week. And Wilson's a really great addition because he can play outside too. He's versatile and he can blitz like crazy. So we got some depth there, which is good. I mean, we may need it like last year, needed a lot. So, but I think Collins is the new elephant in the room, right? He really is.
Because yeah, absolutely. It's again, going back to what we're talking about almost a position out of position player, because, you know, he spent time as, you know, inside and then he's moved up to edge. It's, you still don't know where his most comfortable position is. I agree. I do think he's best suited as a Mike, but just obviously not in this defensive front. So, it was a tough choice. Yeah. But
well, hopefully he'll pull a Hassan Reddick.
Yeah.
And suddenly now we're pissed we didn't pick up the heavier option.
Have a breakout season.
Yeah, just as we were with Gardeck.
Or he could end up pulling the Isaiah Simmons, which is the more likely scenario of instead of outright cutting him, they do like a late round pick swap to send him to another team. Because I would assume because he's a former first round pick, someone would be willing to do the swap a fifth for a sixth or swap a sixth for a seventh in order to take him on.
All right. I'm going to warn ROTB members right now that if that happens, and if, you know, Cameron Thomas is just like cut like Myjai Sanders, you're going to get meltdowns from me. And so be prepared. I cannot accept that with the talent those two young men possess. There was a reason why Collins was a first round pick. The Patriots, I know for a fact, were going to take him if Mac Jones didn't slide to them in the middle of that first round. And in retrospect, I think they wish they would have. There are reasons why Collins was the Nagurski Award winner, the Buckus Award winner, a consensus All-American. See, not only is he a downhill to the ball tackler, he's a clutch cover guy. He's athletic enough to be an impactful player in coverage. And he won a game at Tulsa on a pick six when it looked like they were going to lose. He picks it off and goes, 100 yards and seals the win for Tulsa. I mean, this guy's got all kinds of ability. And hopefully the coaches are right and that he goes off on the edge and he's a double-digit sacker and continues to play the run well. He's leading this team in so many different ways. The other thing I'd like to see the coaches do is, two things. Is I think sometimes you can shift in and out players too much that it's not effective. I mean, let them get a groove and stick with them longer. Secondly is, I don't know why this happened, but it seemed like every time an edge player made a great play, they took him off the field. Gardeck, every time he made it. I remember that first down sack, the only sack we got in the last six games that he got on, in Chicago on Justin Fields when he chased him out of bounds, but still got the sack. They just kept him out of bounds and said, you're out of the game. And I'm just like, are you kidding me? Why? And so, I mean, there's something to be said about continuity. There's something with same guys on the field and chemistry. And it'll be interesting to see if they change some of their substitution patterns this year. I'm all for depth, but let them play for a series. You know, in other words, not for like hockey shift depths during series, but for, you know, let one group play a series, see how they're doing, and then go with a hot group or whatever. But still, that was something I was hoping that the coaches would address this year, and maybe they will. And then Collins plays more, gets more snaps. That's the thing that's frustrating to me, Kevin and Kyle. An athlete of that caliber should never come off the field, ever, ever. I mean, there's no reason to take an athlete like that off your football field defensively. And yet, Kyle, can you look up how many snaps he had last year? Would you mind doing that while we keep going? Because I'd be really curious to know how many, because it just seemed like, what did it seem like to you, Kevin? Maybe half the snaps?
It did feel like that, didn't it? It didn't feel like he was there for as much as you'd probably expect him to be, but yeah, I'm not sure about what the actual number would be.
Right. Well, we could probably see, you know, juxtaposed to Victor Dimakiji's, who's a solid player. You know, he's a solid player. Since he's arrived here, he's done some really good things, and I'm impressed that you kept him. But, you know, when you make two edge draft picks like Ojulari and Thomas, who are, I mean, right off the bat, you'd expect to be better edge rushers than Victor, right? Wouldn't you?
Yeah, you'd expect it, yeah. Especially, obviously, just from what you've seen, sort of, yeah. Obviously, by what we've seen from BJ Ojulari already, and then obviously from what we've heard and obviously seen on tape from Xavier Thomas as well.
Right. But in base, Victor's probably a better choice to play at least one of those edges, defending the run. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sure if he has the coverage skills, though. That, again, it's kind of a miss. If he has to do a lot of coverage, I'm not sure that's his forte. Whereas with faster athletes like Ojulari, Gardeck, and Thomas, you could expect more.
So on the defensive edge, I was trying to figure out how many total defensive snaps they had last year. I think the number, I don't have an exact number, but I think it's slightly over 1,000, because Jalen Thompson, who played almost every snap on defense except for the three games that he was hurt, had 938. So I'm going to assume it's somewhere between 1,000 and 1,100 total snaps for the season.
Right.
Among defensive ends, Zaven Collins had 637. Dennis Gardeck had 510, which is a roughly 50%. BJ Ojulari, 409, which is roughly 40% of total snaps. Victor Dimakije, 386. Cameron Thomas, 355. And then Lucchetta and Banks and Smith kind of in between.
Okay. Thank you for that. That number actually surprises me. I thought it was going to be in the 500 somewhere. And so, dang, he played that many snaps.
Collins had the highest percentage of snaps of defensive ends. The only linebacker that had more snaps was Kaiser White, who played every snap of the first 10 games and then obviously got hurt and missed the last few right. games of the season, but right. at least for the first 10 games, he played 100% of team snaps.
How many snaps is that?
For the first 7 games, it came out to just under 600. I'm sorry, just under 700. It's about 683.
I'm going to guess there are 1,200 something snaps.
If we average that out over a yeah. season, let's do some quick math here on the podcast. So if we say average of 68 times 17 games, 1,156.
Yeah. I think it was more snaps than that because they were on the field a lot per game. But that was really good, quick math, man. Great job. I'm guessing that Collins played about half the snaps. That's about what I thought. And you know, typically for rushers, you want to get double digit sacks from, they play more than that. And,
I think it's probably closer to that 1100 number. Cause the footballguys.com has the percentages of snaps taken during the season. And Collins only had one game last year where he was lower than 50% of the snaps on the field. It was week 3.
Good call. Okay.
Yeah. He kind of hovered around the 50s most of the times, yeah. but he has a couple 63%, 65%. The last game of the season, he played 89% of the snaps, but that was a statistical anomaly because he didn't have a single game over 70% of snaps except for the last game of the season.
So, but for juxtaposition, can you look up Max Crosby?
Yes, I will look up the snap counts for the Raiders last right. year. Let's see. Las Vegas Raiders, Max Crosby. Also, interestingly, Bilal Nichols, who is obviously a Raider, he had 615, so almost exactly the same as Zaven Collins. Yep. Max Crosby was 1,081. He had 11 games last year where he played 100% of the team's defensive snaps. Only 2 games where he was lower than 90%, which I think one of them he got hurt in. But yes, he was over 95% of the snaps in most of the games.
Right. So how many sacks did he have?
Max Crosby last year had 14.5 sacks last year.
Okay. I mean, if he plays half of those snaps,
he's got about 7.5 or 8.
So there is a, you know, a ratio of snaps to sacks. You got to be honest about it. You know, Chandler Jones didn't come off the field much. His only beef, which I concur with, was being dropped into coverage on 3rd and longs. Made absolutely no sense to me, and still doesn't. And he left the building, citing that as a good reason to leave. So, yeah, this is an interesting thing to see what kind of snaps he gets, how committed they are to him, and see if he can. Because, I mean, he's the athlete. You know, it just comes down to the Malcolm Gladwell 10,000-hour rule. Is, you know, this is a new role for him, and, you know, Gladwell, you know, theorized if you spend 10,000 hours doing something, you're going to be pretty dang good at it. Right now, Zaven is, you know, maybe at 1,000 hours, not 10. So he's still developing the muscle memories. But now, let's see if he comes up with an array of pass moves. Let's see if he finds a way to get home on the pass rush. I mean, I think physically he's got it in him. It's just that, you know, there's a technique to it. It's not as simple as, okay, just go out there and start rushing the passer. The reason why Hassan Reddick was a quick convert was he did that all college. So he already was rushing the edge. I mean, Collins did it occasionally at Tulsa, but not all that much. So, and when he did, it was usually out of a blitz, so which is a little different. And tackles weren't taking him on, big tackles. But I think Kevin's right. Collins is the elephant in the room. And a lot will depend on this year on what happens with him. And, you know, of course, if he gets cut or traded before training camp, nothing's going to happen with him. And he's going to be another, as they say, another one bites the dust. And frustrating for me, certainly, and for some others. All right, let's go to the cornerback position. Did you go cornerbacks and safeties, or did you do it all in one?
I did, yeah. I went corners and safeties as well, yeah.
How many corners you keep in?
Six.
Yeah.
Sean Murphy Bunting, Max Melton, Garrett Williams, Elijah Jones, Keitel Clark, and Starling Thomas.
Right. I wanted to keep six too, but I ran out of numbers. And so for me, it came down to Clark and Thomas. And there's something about Keitel Clark I absolutely love. He's a dog.
And yeah, I love him too.
Yeah. I mean, I was intrigued with Starling Thomas too. But I think at this stage in his career, he could – I don't think he's as versatile as Keitel. I think Keitel can play the slot. So, and boy, I love the way Keitel tackles. He's a baller. So then you can, I think we can slide, you know, sneak Starling Thomas. I'm hoping through waivers, but I wanted to keep a six corner, but then where I was keeping in other positions, I felt like I couldn't. So I commend you on that. I like it. How many safeties did you keep?
Four.
And they are?
Buddha, Jalen, Rabbit, and Andre, I can never say his second name correctly,
Cheshire played pretty decently. He's not a very physical player, but he's, you know, around the ball a lot, except in the area that I was hoping for the most, in deep safety. And thank God we drafted the Rabbit, Dadrion Taylor Demerson.
Yep.
He can play back there. I also think studying Garrett Williams at Syracuse, the two of them could be lights out twin cover two safeties on the back end and not give up the big plays that we had to lead the league in big passing plays last year. I mean, it was out of control. And neither Buddha nor Jalen are equipped to handle deep safety cover. They're both great in the box and both great in up in zones and up in coverage rather than back. But now, given that, I'm just so enamored with the kid Blunt. Joey Blunt, I just think he is a star waiting to happen. He certainly was on special teams. But this kid is a chisel. I mean, his physique and his aggressiveness are outstanding. He's like a Joey on the spot. I mean, he creates turnover. I mean, this every time he's in the game, the ball's on the floor. You know, it's uncanny. And so I selected him over Andre Cheshire. And I was thinking we could pass Cheshire through waivers, seeing as he's not really a starter, but he's a good contributor and he's pretty decent on special teams. You know, so how many in total? So you had 25 on defense?
Yes, it was 25. And okay. Then we've got,
right,
let's have a look, 12, 18, 20, 24.
Right.
I think it is. Yeah, 24. Yep.
Oh, so all right. So you had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 defensive linemen, right?
Two, three, four, five. Yeah. And then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 edges, 6 corners, 4 safeties.
So you have a guy left over.
I've got, yeah, this is what I put this together yesterday, and I did this after a very warm day in the British sunshine. I think my head might have melted. And I said this last night. I think I can't actually count to 53, but I've got, yeah, because I've got obviously three special teams in there as well. So
Right.
26, 29.
Well, this is great because
Yeah,
now
my
they
math
can
doesn't
put you
work.
on the clock. All right.
There we go. Pick one more player.
Yeah. So, and we'll give you the options. Okay. This is fantastic. I love this. All right. So,
This was completely planned. Yeah, absolutely.
wow. What a, and this is going to be great drama.
Yeah.
So you're three on special teams.
Yeah, it was Matt Prater, Blake Gilligan, and Aaron Brewer.
Oh,
Pretty
you went
solid choices there.
conservative. Yeah, I went with Shimko.
Yeah, I was really debating about going for Shimko. Obviously, Aaron Brewer is as steady as they come, but you obviously bring in Shimko, who hasn't had registered a bad snap in his entire college career,
Exactly.
especially when we're almost moving over to trying to get the team younger. I was really debating what we'd do, and I honestly wouldn't be surprised. I was really tied up with these two, but yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if it is Shimko over Brewer.
At this point, I think we could flip a coin anyway.
You could, yeah, absolutely.
And it depends on Aaron Brewer's health too. He's getting on there, but I love Aaron Brewer. So either way is fine. And maybe if Brewer makes it, that's you could make a case for Shimko on the practice squad. And hopefully he would slide through there. I imagine he would. So all right. So I have list here are your options for the 53rd man in Kevin Murray's 53 man favorites. You could choose between Clayton Tune, Amari DiMercato, running back, Kelvin Beachum. You could reconsider that. Roy Lopez, Cameron Thomas, Zaven Collins, Joey Blunt, and it won't be Shimko. Kyle, do you have a drum roll?
It's between two. It's between two players. I'm going to go for Clayton Tune.
All right.
Yeah,
Woohoo.
I think so. I think
Yep.
weighing up the options in terms of obviously developing a backup quarterback, if there
Right.
is such a thing, I guess.
Right.
And I think we could do a lot worse. Like, I do want to see more from him. I think DiMercato was the other option, really, between the two. Yeah, I think I'm gonna go, yeah, make it three quarterbacks, bring forward three quarterbacks.
Right. Now, one player that neither one of us held on to was the recent signing of Marcus Bailey.
Yes.
So, again, that just threw me into a 50-man roster tizzy. My head's already spinning. And if that were the case, and he didn't play much linebacker for the Bengals at all, so he's kind of a special teams ace. Kind of like what we had in Zeke Turner, right? So if we're putting him in there, who comes out? Be hard to say, right? I mean, if,
It would be.
we
I mean,
don't want to say.
you could argue the only other person really that sort of fits that bill will be someone like Owen Papo, but I like Papo over Marcus Bailey.
Me too.
So I don't really see how. he would fit in this roster.
Right.
I think maybe if I had to say, I'd probably have to go down to five receivers and have someone like Chris Moore, perhaps.
Right. Or go down to five corners.
I'll go down to five corners, yep, and do right. Stalin Thomas.
Yep. Those are the two spots that I'm wondering in the final analysis. Will we have six wide receivers, and will we have six corners? But I think it's it's possible. I mean, if they cut TJ Palmer, I'm just going to be freaking livid. I mean, you know, did you see the piece that Monty did with the scouting award, the Rod Graves scouting award?
Yeah, I did indeed. Yeah.
Right. I mean, Alphonso Knight. Well, they had him make that pick, call in the pick to TJ Palmer. Because Knight was the one who pounded the table for him. Knight was the one who went to the Hula Bowl and came away loving this kid. Then he followed TJ Palmer to the East-West Shrine Game, where they continued to bond. I mean, this is what gets me about, you know, signing a one-year veteran. I mean, and possibly giving up on 4 years of a promising young player. Because I'll tell you this. I did more research on TJ Palmer. See, you know, it's easy to go, yeah, Zay Jones, wow. You know, we got, you know, a perennial starter, you know, joining the team. But, you know, you look at the back end. I mean, Palmer's, you know, he did 430 visits and had 3 Zoom meetings. This kid was getting around. And, you know, I mean, people say that Puka Nacua is the, you know, unicorn, like it won't happen to too many people. Well, I would say go look up Puka Nacua's measurables and go look up TJ Palmer's. They're the same height, they're the same weight, only Palmer runs in the four fours, and Paku was in the 4.6s, and you know, and they've got really good body control, deep moves. I mean, you never know. The thing is that to automatically assume that, well, it won't happen to our guys. I mean, this kid could light the Cardinals on fire if given the chance. But if you're just going to bury him deep and count him out before it even begins, and then even risk him to waivers, all that work that your scout of the year did could be for naught. And it's happened before where we've had fifth round draft picks cut and claimed, you know? That's where this roster, these roster decisions get pretty, you know, intense. And
absolutely. And I think the one thing we need to sort of keep in mind as well is the emphasis on, you know, from the organization is the fact they want to become this draft and develop team. And by signing sort of 1 year free agents, it's just a case of what is that, you know, I get that to maybe plug holes of dire need, but I'd much rather see these guys being developed, you know, like teams that we see who have that continued success where they've got strong draft classes that they've developed and created that team. You know, I don't want to see sort of these old days of us signing, you know, not necessarily aging free agent veterans, but I want to see us sort of make these, you know, turn these fifth and sixth round picks into gems. And, you know, right. From if it's anything to go off last season, I think we were along those right lines, you know, Dante Stills, Keetrell Clark, you know, they were both late round picks, but
right.
You know, that's what I want to see from this team. And like I said, when I was very perplexed by the Zay Jones signing. I put something out there on Twitter just saying, you know, I wasn't sure what to make of it because right. I just didn't see how he fit into the team. And, you know, especially when you put resources into that wide receiver position this year in both undrafted free agents and in the draft. It's a case of, I don't quite get where he's going to quite fit, but I do think he will make the team. It's just a case of, I don't get that 1 year contract. I don't understand with what we're trying to do with this team, but hopefully I'll get proven wrong and he comes out and provides that perfect second or third option for Kyler, you know, but I'd much rather see his share of targets go towards Michael Wilson. You know, he's already proven that he can be that great number two receiver, providing he stays healthy. But that's what I want to see from the team going forward, really. And that's why I found it a bit of a head scratcher.
Yeah, me too. But looking at our lads, and these guys do a great job. Our lads, .com. Check out their depth chart for the Cardinals. They update it for every signing. So here's their starting lineups for the Cardinals right now. And in some cases, there were players here that neither I nor Kevin kept on our 53-man favorites. So they have Marvin Harrison Jr. starting at left wide receiver. They have Michael Wilson starting at right wide receiver with Zay Jones penciled in behind that for now. They had Chris Moore behind MHJ, which Moore, by the way, people might be sleeping on this. He had over 400 yards last year in Tennessee at a 19.3 average. Kid can take the top off, and he's an outstanding special teamer, which to me makes him more valuable than a Zay Jones right now, because he could handle both of those scenarios. I mean, the special teams component is huge. And then they had Greg Dortch at slot with Pascal behind him and Palmer as third. That makes me nervous. And then starting at left tackle, Jonah Williams, they're making that call. He's going to play left with Kelvin Beachin behind. They have Elijah Wilkinson starting at left guard, which the coaches seem to really love this guy, and it wouldn't surprise me. They have Isaiah Adams behind him. Then they have Froholtz at center with Evan Brown behind him. I don't think Brown was signed to be a backup center, but and then they have Will Hernandez starting at right guard with Tristan Colon behind him. That makes sense to me, although I think Colon's the backup center. And then Paris Johnson at right tackle with Christian Jones behind him. All right, so and then Trey McBride at the starting tight end with Tip Raymond. Interesting, they have him ahead of Higgy Bear. But Higgy Bear has a niche. I mean, he's a receiving tight end who can move and up, you know, go in motion. He can be kind of an H-back. But he's also, I thought, did a respectable job battling it out in line. I thought he made real strides, and he made real strides with Kyler and connecting down the on crossing patterns and sidelines. Now we need to see him bust a seam, which I think he can do repeatedly. Pretty cool, too, that Higgins and Wilson were college teammates at Stanford. Imagine that those two to throw to. Pretty cool. With Kyler quarterback, Ritter 2, QB2, Toon, QB3. Connor starting at running back. Benson they have second. Dallas they have third. Carter they have fourth. And DeMarcado fifth. And Tony Jones sixth. All right, so that's where, you know, we've been discussing and debating. On defense, they have two rookies started. All right. So at defensive end, Darius Robinson with Collier behind him. Bilal Nichols at nose tackle with Tonga and Lopez behind him. Jones starting at defensive tackle with Stills behind him. Excuse me. Left outside linebacker, we call it Strong, Saban Collins with Dimakiji behind him. Kaiser White at left inside linebacker with Mac Wilson behind him. That's an interesting, and Marcus Bailey behind Wilson. And then Chris Barnes starting at right linebacker with Owen Popo and Trevor Nowaski. That's a kid I really want to look at in preseason. I love his tape. And I know Lions fans were pissed that they waived him because he had a really good preseason for them. And then at right outside linebacker, B.J. Ojulari with Gardecki and X Thomas behind. Where is Cameron Thomas? Jenkins. Oh boy. So it's Collins, strong outside linebacker. Get this lineup. Collins, Demikeje, Laketa, and then Cameron Thomas. Which in terms of outside linebacker, he's not an outside linebacker. It's just not. All right. Not going back there again. So, and then they have in the secondary, they got Max Melton playing left cornerback. Love it. With Starling Thomas behind and then Catrell Clark. And then Michael Oyemita, who's an interesting pickup too. Then Jalen, it's strong. With Andre Chacheret, your guy there at backup strong. And then Buddha, it's free. The Rabbit behind Buddha and Joey Blount behind the Rabbit. Then they have Murphy Bunting starting at right cornerback with Eliza Jones behind him. And then Garrett Williams starting in the slot with Jaden Davis, who we didn't even talk about, who I'm really excited about for a lot of reasons. We'll give him some time during the preseason because I think this kid's going to really impress. He's this kid's a baller and he can play the slot. It's an interesting pick how they picked him at the end there, having already drafted so many corners. That says you something about this kid. So, and then with Gilligan, Prater, and Brewer as the special teamers, and Dortch as the punt returner, they have him over DJ, and Dallas as the kick returner over Dortch. So there it is from our lads. Interesting how they envision it right now.
Yeah.
And and this was so much fun. I think it's always fun to do this. It's always challenging to do it. So we want to bring you back after we've seen a few preseason games. If not, we're meeting with you before then to do this again once we've seen guys in action.
Yeah, that sounds good. It's good to see sort of once the guys are on the field to see if we get a bit of an idea of what this team's going to shape up to look like. But again, it's always very difficult with preseason because it's basically usually completely different teams that you see on the field. But that'll be fun. That'll be good exercise.
Yeah. The challenge for you will be watching these preseason games at like 2:30 in the morning.
Yeah, it's usually it's not too bad really on preseason, but that is always the case. To be fair, that's why I usually it's quite unfortunate that I chose the Cardinals in a way in the sense that when the games are on, typically the early games are around sort of like 5-6 o'clock in the evening, and then obviously the later games go to sort of 9 o'clock, and then sort of 1-2 o'clock in the morning. So unfortunately, the Cardinals last season were quite a few late games, so it was quite a few bleary eyed Monday mornings at work, but. It's worth it.
do you subscribe to NFL.com?
So I do have a Game Pass. Yeah, so I watch it through the Game Pass. Yeah.
So during the preseason, you could see that's why I do it because they give you the preseason games. So you could actually enjoy a normal British night.
Yeah, and then just early. Yeah, exactly, and then watch it the next day.
And honey, I'm off to watch the game. Right there on tape, and it's in condensed version already.
Yeah,
you can go bing 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 and take your notes and do whatever. So but in real games it's you're never gonna do that. You gotta stay up. I mean, it's just you wouldn't be able to get to sleep. So
That's half the problem too.
Yep.
I don't know. The last couple of years, there's been a couple of days where you could have woken up and been like, yeah, let's see what happens here.
No. It's just, you can tell Kevin's got the bug.
Well and truly. I'm kind of itching a bit because obviously schedule release is Wednesday. this week. So I'm kind of itching to see the schedule, because obviously we've seen quite a lot of rumors floating around online that we might potentially be a team on one of the international games. So if that's going to be the case, I'm hoping it's going to be one of the games in London rather than Germany. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed.
I'd be so happy for you if that's the case.
I was lucky enough to see them when they came over for the last international game, but unfortunately it wasn't a very good result for us. That's when we got completely blown out by the Rams. And that was Carson Palmer's last professional game. That's the only thing I would take out of that. But I actually went with a friend who was a Rams fan, so it wasn't exactly the most enjoyable day in that regard. So fingers crossed that it's going to be one of the teams in London this year. So
if it is, don't bring the Rams fan.
No, I'm not going to this time. No.
Bring someone else who's a Cardinal fan.
Yeah.
So, and you've got quite a crew going on over there already. So,
Kyle, yeah, we're slowly building.
Yeah, Kyle, what's your final thought?
We'll have schedule release reactions next week, and that'll be fun. And yeah, this is a fun exercise. Eventually, at some point during the summer, I'll put one of these things together for you, Walter. I know you like doing
it. Yeah, baby.
Now, because I've said for years, I think roster prediction things are ridiculous, because 53 is such an arbitrary number that the owners could keep as many players as they wanted if they were just willing to pay a few more $1,000 to practice squad guys. But yeah. I will put one together for the spirit of this season of optimism for the Cardinals.
Yes. So, and by the way, I guess it was announced today that the first game is going to be Ravens at Chiefs on that Thursday night opener. So, that already has intrigue. All right. So Kevin, your parting words.
Yeah, this is a fun exercise. It's the first time I've really tried to put together a 53 or a 52, I should say. thanks to my brilliant math skills. But yeah, it was fun. It was good to sort of see sort of where we were both thinking about where players are going to fall. And like I said, it's a very strange bubble for this team. But like Carl just touched on, 53 is a very arbitrary number and it's very difficult to guess. But yeah, it was good. It was good fun. I really enjoyed it. So yeah, thanks again for having me.
Well, I think you did a fabulous job. And by the way, we've all had trouble counting to 53. Somehow it's bound to happen. But you did it the right way. Sometimes I've done it feeling good about myself and suddenly I'm like, shit, it's 54 I picked. Now what do I do?
I was too ruthless.
Yeah, you did it the best way. You came up with 52 and then decided on that last guy, which was typically what teams have to do. You know, it's like this last guy, which one do we take? And, it's just fascinating. So, yeah, you were great. And thanks so much for joining us once again. And
it's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And I'm excited to do this again with you for sure when we know more and we've had a chance to see some of these guys play. So, thanks to all of you out there, Cardinal fans, that have been so supportive. Our numbers have been great, and it's all thanks to you. And you know, thanks to Kyle Little Rock Ledbetter, my right-hand man, as always, for the great job he does, and for Kevin Murray, who's my favorite British Cardinals fan already. And
thank you very much.
Does a great job on his podcast, Talking Cardinals. Right. What's the name of your podcast?
Yeah, so it is Let's Talk Cardinals is the name of the podcast. Yeah, it's available on Spotify at the moment, but very shortly be branching out onto other platforms as well. But that's where it's hosted at the moment.
Give it a look out. And of course, Kevin is, good friends now with the professor. So you can check him out. Professor's had him on. And we had the professor on last week. Here we did some talk about Kyler Murray. Next time we're on, I think I'd really like to break down Kyler with you as well. So but thanks to all of you, and in the interim, may the red rain of hopefully Super Bowl confetti one day shower down on you into the red sea. Red rain.